Let's get out to the Band of Brothers hotline and bring in the Deseret News star, Dick Harmon, who was covering the Cougs at their final scrimmage of spring ball. Dick, what's up?
Hey, how's it going? Is this confession day with Darnell?
Yeah, it
is. He keeps working on me, Dick. He keeps working on me.
I know you have a whole lot more sins than Darnell. Biggest mistake that you made in high school that you can share with us that's not as, you know, I mean, if it is kind of like Darnell's, you know, mistake, that's fine. I mean, did you ever mess up in high school, make some stupid decisions?
I made a real stupid decision. There was a Provo High parking lot. It was at a dance. I borrowed my brother's 69 GTO Judge, 400 horsepower. I got in it, and I laid rubber for 20 feet. And at the end of that, I thought I was pretty smart, pretty cool. And a policeman came up, gave me a ticket for reckless driving.
Oh.
And I lost my driver's license. I had to take a ride to go to the junior prom.
What an idiot. Idiot, man. So dumb. I like that
dumb.
One, though. That's good. That's a good one. I was like, as you were telling it, I was getting excited because I, you know, with Darnell's, I was like, all right, where's this going? I was kind of getting excited. And he's like, and I pushed over the bar. I was like, what? Really, Darnell? Darnell, you can come and hang out with me anytime because you will keep me on the straight and narrow. Dick, on the other hand, I got to stay away from you. You're trouble. Dick, what did you see at the spring extravaganza, this alumni day? What did you think of what you saw on the field?
You know, I saw a couple of things. I saw probably the handprint of Bronco Mendenhall on the defense. I saw what he's trying to do. He's not there yet, but I saw that. The thing that stood out the most to me, however, was probably the receivers. This receiving group led by Mitch Matthews is pretty darn good. They've got some guys. They're going to make plays. They're going to stretch the defenses. There are going to be mismatches. Their timing is getting almost impeccable. Whether or not they're going to be in the realm of an Austin Collie group or whatever, Dennis Pitta, I can't say. Probably not, but these guys, I think the sky's the limit for them. They're very impressive.
I like it. I like that verbiage you used, the handprint of Bronco Mendenhall. I think you saw it in the effort. You know, the defense is struggling right now, but there was some turnovers. And you did a nice piece on Micah Hanneman. He had a phenomenal pick six against the one and only Taysom Hill in 7-on-7. And mind you, Taysom Hill was driving. He had scored on the previous drive, was driving once again. I think they were on the 24-yard line or so. Goes through his progressions, comes back to the flat. Micah Hanneman picks it off and takes it to the house.
Well, the most impressive thing about that was, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was in a Skelly type of situation where Taysom Hill was not under pressure. He didn't have a pass rush. So, mm-hmm. Yes, he did make it through. He made it through his progressions. He looked all over. He waited. There's no pass rush there. So he just had to try to pick out what he was doing. The coverage was pretty good. He made a decision to throw the ball to the flat, and Hinneman on a dead run picked it off and ran all the way for a touchdown. I don't know. Breaking down a Skelly like that, you know, could mean this, could mean that. But what I saw in other drills was that Micah Hanneman looked very impressive. Good hips, very good burst. He's got a real good quickness. His top end speed is good. His mid-range speed, changing direction, is excellent. He's good. Got good hands. He looks like he's teachable. He's a humble kid, and he comes from some great DNA. His older brother is now playing with Chicago in the minors. And it was a great BYU baseball player. And these guys have speed. I was able to get a hold of Nick Hall at the end of the drills, and I don't know that he's given out too many interviews this spring. He's been hammered pretty good over the last 4 months, but you know, with the little short comments, he did explain to me Micah's situation and said, "Hey, we'll see. You know, nothing's in stone now, but I wouldn't hesitate to put him out there to play corner and even start him."
I like it. What else did you learn about Micah? Anything of note? I mean, how long has he been back from a mission? He's already making some noise on the depth chart. We had Brandon Bradley come on last week, and I asked him, if you had to start, play a game August 1st, who do you think the starting secondary would be? And he mentioned Micah Hanneman and or Michael Shelton at the field corner spot.
Yeah, that's, you know, I heard him say that, and then you've got your buddy It's this Cougar Nation.
Jerem or Spencer Linton? Those are my pals.
No, it's the former corner.
Brian
Logan is pumping up Michael Shelton big time because they call him a mini-me of some sort.
Even though he's taller than Brian.
He's about 2 inches taller, right? But, the thing I liked about those guys is, you know, they've got a great big assignment in spring. I mean, covering Mitch Matthews, forget it. I mean, that guy, I don't know how close he's running to a 4.5, but he's 4.6 and he's 6'6". He's got a 38-inch vertical. When he's an improved player, he's improved his skills. He's receiving the ball and making himself a target in a better way than he did last year. He's smarter. He's a leader. And when he gets on the field, he's a huge target for any quarterback. And these guys have a huge job, I think, and a challenge to try to cover them. But, you know, Micah, I saw him in the drills. He looked like he could play. He did tell me, you asked about one thing that maybe was surprising. He says, you know, I can go for a while, but then my legs get tired. He says, I still have my mission legs, and so my endurance is not there. I can go at short bursts for a while, but then I can feel it, and I start to wear down. So those are things he needs to work on in the coming weeks and months, and I think he will with the new conditioning coach to get himself back. The OU has a program that brings those guys along, you know, pretty slow and, you know, to avoid injury and tries to get them acclimated back from tracking, that's the sprinting and taking hits. And I think that he's well into that program, and his progression will be, you know, timely, but it'll be monitored.
Dick, it was pretty obvious the problems the defense was having last year. Where do you think they benefit the most from having Bronco taking over the defense? And have you seen that kind of progress in spring?
You know, it's the limited, you know, and you know this as well as I do, Darnell, the limited amount of time that we get to watch what they're doing, it's very hard to put a meter on what's going on. But the things that I noticed that Bronco brings to it is that when he speaks, those guys listen and they respect him and they jump and they're trying to please him. So that's one thing. The second thing is that the accountability and effort that he's requiring people. You know, he's taking guys that have talent, some guys that have a little bit of talent, some guys that have average talent, and he's trying to get them to play at a certain pace and rhythm and to be in the right place at the right time. And before he gets to all that stuff, it's the effort. And so what you see out there, you see him getting these guys to run from sideline to sideline, to run from play, to run to the ball. The effort has to be there before he can break down and get the other things done. And I think that's the foundation of what he's always done. And he did a couple of years ago when he took over after he fired Jaime Hill. That's one thing he brought to them, is that the effort level just I would say it went up at least 30-35%. And if he can do that from guys that are running full speed already, somehow he did it, and that defense improved immediately within 7 days. He's got half a year, most of the year, to work on it to improve that. But I think that's the thing that I noticed, that the effort is going to be there. The kids respect him. They listen to him. They're accountable, and they want to please him. It's a lot different when you have a head coach out there barking signals at you than it is an assistant coach, and I don't care who the assistant coach is.
Well, Dick, and I wonder, and maybe this is unanswerable because, like you mentioned, Nick Howell hasn't talked a lot to the media, and it's been hard to observe, but I wonder what his relationship is with Bronco now, considering that Bronco makes him defensive coordinator, gets a year at it, doesn't work, pulls him back. That has to create a different dynamic between you and your head coach, considering at one point you were his protege, and now where does he stand? I just feel like it's an interesting position to put. I felt like he put Nick in a really unbelievable position to follow him as defensive coordinator with as little experience as Nick had. But now, moving forward, where do you see that relationship?
Well, I think you kind of hit it on the head, Darnell, that he put him in an unbelievable position because he took one person away from him. He says, okay, you be the defensive coordinator, but I'm going to be the head coach, and I'm going to go help with the offensive line. And do your job, do the secondary, coordinate the defense, but you got to do it with one less coach, one less set of eyes, one less person in the room. And so what he did is he put him in a great disadvantage, I think, just as a coach. First time ever, rookie defensive coordinator, and then you kind of handcuffed him. So what I see Bronco doing now is saying part of what I'm doing is giving all my defensive coaches, whether it be Kelly Papinga, Paul Tidwell, Nick Howe, I'm giving them one more body over there, one more guy in the meetings, one more voice, one more set of eyes. And I do think Bronk was very talented at breaking down an offense, at breaking down schemes and keys and presenting those keys and teaching them. And I think just having him there is a great asset to all the coaches, including Nick Howe. If I was Nick Howe, I would be embarrassed. I'd be a little bit humiliated. I'd be severely ticked off. I would feel all of those things. But one thing I probably would feel is great gratitude that I could concentrate on one aspect of the defense and that there's another person in the room helping me. And so in that part, I think he's grateful for the help. But, you know, he's understandably been upset this spring. And, you know, I don't blame him. He's been hammered in a lot of forums, some of them on the Internet, where, you know, he might be a baby killer and, you know, and burn villages, you know, for as far as they care.
Potomkin villages?
Yes.
No? Okay.
Well, Dick, here's the thing, though, is if the defensive backfield comes out and has a great year, I think Bronco gets more credit than Nick, which is also going to be, I think, an issue where Nick's going to go, what do I got to do around here? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I can see that. But, you know, BYU's weaknesses were many last year. They started up front. They failed to put pressure on people. Their linebackers were not, probably up to par. In a lot of ways, injuries had something to do with that. Same with the secondary. So there's a lot of reasons why it was failing. But as a whole, they have to move forward as a whole. And every part has to work. And those corners, and Ben can bear his testimony better than anybody, if you don't get a push up front with the front seven, I don't care how good your secondary is, how good your corners are, they are ultimately going to fail if you cannot pressure a quarterback.
Yeah, you better be real good at holding and getting away with it, son, because it takes, I mean, really, it's difficult, man. Dick Harmon from the Deseret News on with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. Darnell and I were debating this in the first segment. Now that all is said and done, spring ball is over. Do you think it was more beneficial to have Christian Stewart out there throwing the rock to these wide receivers rather than perhaps having I know, and this is hypothetical, but rather than having maybe a junior college kid out there getting those same reps that could potentially back up Taysom Hill this year?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know what positions each one of you took, but yes, if you had a JC player, the kid from Missouri that transferred to JC in Arizona, and he was out there, and he was that kind of a talent, then yes, it would benefit you to have him out there throwing the ball because he potentially would be a backup, immediately in spring, immediately in fall, until Tanner Mangum gets back, and, you know, whatever. You would have a solid guy there that you needed to get those reps. But in absence of that, it absolutely was a brilliant move, I think, by Jason Beck to go to Bronco and say, hey, let's go ask Christian, let's bring him out here. Because then you didn't have a big learning curve for those receivers to get really good. You didn't have a big learning curve for the offensive line and the backs to have to learn things and be patient for a guy that didn't know what he was doing or just simply didn't have a feel for the offense. You didn't have the opportunity for the defense to then face a quarterback who'd been through the wars, played in the bowl game, should have won it, threw for 24 touchdowns, and, you know, throwing the ball at you and throwing with it, you know, with some accuracy and being able to go deep on you and doing all those things. You wouldn't have had that. But a JC guy probably, if he was in the classification of a outstanding, highly recruited JC guy, then you probably would have had that. But they didn't. They didn't have it. Nobody wanted to come around and set behind Taysom. You had, you know, two quarterbacks that already left the program. They didn't want to do it. It's been hard to recruit guys because they didn't want to come. And so, you know, now you got Tanner Mangum coming at the end of June, and what are you going to do? I think it was a brilliant move. I think it helped the entire team move forward. And I think you got to put a crown on the head of Christian Stewart. The guy is probably epitomized everything that BYU stands for and should be hailed as a hero.
Hey, Dick, what kind of a track do you think Tanner Mangum is on once he gets back? I know we were talking to Coach Beck about that last week and said that he gets back early part of June, and they've got him, you know, set up to come in and do the old missionary leg thing. You know, they have a certain training regimen, but they're going to have to push him into a spot that nobody else has really been in before, coming off a mission and being the backup quarterback. Well, what kind of track is Tanner on, and do you think he's a guy that can handle all they're going to throw at him?
You know, that's a good question, Darnell. you know, from all accounts, from everybody that's watched him play, and we watched him a little bit when he gray-shirted before his mission, is that he does have an elite arm. He's very accurate. That's what he is. He's a pocket passer. And pocket passers only get better when they get reps, and they only get reps if they're given the time in practice, and if they step out there and do it on their own, starting at 7 or 6 in the morning with receivers that show up, and he needs to step in and immediately do that. He needs to do it twice a day, maybe three times a day, throughout the end of June and throughout all of July and getting into August. He needs to do that without injuring his arm. He's got to be very smart about what he does. He doesn't get tennis elbow and get the tendons in there inflamed, and then he won't be of any use in August. So there's a lot of things that he has to do to be very, very smart to get his rhythm and timing back. He's a kid that has the DNA and the clock and the timing in his mind to get things done in a big way. You guys know as well as I do that he was the MVP of the Elite 11 with Jameis Winston, and you know that's no small honor. But then on the other hand, we also know that Jake Heaps was the MVP of that Elite 11 camp too, and Jake just never could really recover from, you know, having so much pressure on him and starting so early. So maybe a more mature Tanner Mangum can look at things, see where he fits in, and come in. You know, Taysom didn't have to do that when he came off his mission from, I think it was Australia. I think he was behind Riley Nelson a little bit and got a little bit of playing time, a little bit of reps, but he didn't have the burden of having to be the absolute backup because you had some other help there, and it just wasn't required of him. But, you know, it can be done, but we haven't seen very much of it at all. You're right, Darnell.
Talk to me about return missionaries that have had great success at quarterback at Brigham Young University or other schools, for that matter, like that first year. Say Tanner Mangum has to be thrown into the refiner's fire, and he's got to start versus Mizzou, you know, mid-season at Arrowhead Stadium. Man, it's not a position that I want to put a freshman in, I can tell you that much. But has, in the history of BYU, has there been any return missionary quarterbacks that have been able to step in their first year and just be tremendous?
No, not that I can remember. No, not ever. You got to remember this, that until 2001, there had never been a BYU quarterback that had served the LDS mission and come back that had led BYU to a conference championship in the Mountain West and Western Athletic Conference. That had never happened before until Brandon Dolman did it in 2001, and he had spent 3 years getting himself ready to then play 4 games in 2000 as a relief guy that came in, and then in 2001 he had that great season. So no, it's not happened. You had John Beck come back, but he took some time. John Beck's as good a quarterback you see around here. You saw Max Hall. If I were to say that a guy came back and made an impact, Max Hall came back as a scout team player for Arizona State, before his mission, went on a shortened mission of a few months, then came to BYU and sat behind John Beck, learned and watched, and then when he got his opportunity to play, he was right out of the gate, right out of the chute, and did it. But it was not right off his mission. There was some time there that he had spent. Other than that, I would have to go long and hard to try to find somebody that had an immediate, major impact on that very, very, big challenge of being a BYU quarterback. I can't think of that. Darnell, asking you.
I can't. The only thing that comes to my mind is Ty Detmer as a true freshman. Was he a redshirt freshman, though, wasn't he, when he first played? Did he sit his first year?
Yeah, his last year in high school was 1988 at Southwest High School in San Antonio. And then he came and redshirted.
Right.
And then he had that year that he came in 7 times for Covey.
Covey, right. And he threw like 7 touchdowns against UTEP or something. And then 7 interceptions against Wyoming.
I think it was the MVP ball of the Freedom Bowl when he came in and threw 2 touchdown passes to Chuck Cutler.
But this
and
is
that
such,
was his freshman year.
This is such a unique situation because it's the backup role, which you may not ever have to use. But if you do, putting him in that position, I mean, to me, that's almost like setting him up to fail.
Yeah, but you almost have to plan on it now, 2 out of the last 3 seasons, mm-hmm. I mean, you don't want to plan on that, obviously, but Taysom Hill, the way that he plays football, Even though he is Superman, Superman has some kryptonite, and that kryptonite is Brian Sweet for one reason or another. But it's a Sweet type of player.
I'm thinking here as we talk, and there was one quarterback that came off the mission that I think is a freshman that made an impact in this exact role that we're talking about, and that was Ryan Hancock. Ryan Hancock was a pitcher.
Yep.
And he was a baseball pitcher, and he came back from a mission, and they went through three quarterbacks. John Walsh got hurt, and they had Clements come in, and then they had Young come in or whoever. And then Hancock was the one, and he ended up being pretty good, pretty darn good right out of the chute.
Hey, Dick, wasn't Drew Miller a true freshman as well when he played?
Drew who?
Drew Miller.
Yeah, not a return missionary, though. But
not a return missionary, but still a true freshman. I'm just like any guy coming into his first college football live experience is interesting to me. And to put him in this position as the backup guy who may be thrust into a role to play if Taysom gets hurt or something, I just think it's crazy.
Yeah. No, I think it's crazy, too. But Dick Harmon on with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. Also, the other subject that we debated in the first hour has to do with recruiting. And I know we don't delve into a ton of recruiting here, but I'm sure you heard that Troy Warner, the brother of Fred Warner, has committed to the University of Oregon. BYU was the first, I think, Division I school to offer Troy, was hot on his tail early on. And you thought that BYU was the favorite, but he commits to the University of Oregon. Is this a blow for BYU? And how does it affect, I guess, the Warner family? I know we're speculating and projecting here, but you're splitting up brothers here.
You know, it's interesting, that thing. And, you know, BYU's not going to get them all, and a lot of guys want to have different experiences, and certainly in Eugene you're going to get the regular college party atmosphere, and in the Nike University you're going to get 15 different kinds of outfits, maybe 15,000, whatever it is. But you got to remember, too, that there's been players that have gone to Oregon and Oregon State that have left and come to BYU, including Ioane Unga, who became BYU's leading tackler, the number one or two tackler in the NCAA when he played. So there are ways that people go to schools and ended up coming back. You know, Harvey Longy's one that went up to Utah. It was a Pac-12 school. I mean, this happens all the time. I think BYU's got a receiver that came out of Arizona State now, is in school now and playing. I can't remember his name, but those things happen all the time. Will it happen with him? Don't know. Have no idea that it would. I wouldn't count on it, but I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. Once he gets to college, he gets in the dorm, gets to the apartments, and his parents talk to him a little bit, and he experiences some stuff. People have a change of heart.
Experience a little adversity can change your mind real quick, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Dick Harmon from the Deseret News, we appreciate you. Thank you so much for joining us. And do you have any words of advice or anything that can help us today?
I would say to you guys, keep your head up. When you're hitting free throws, keep your head down and still when you're hitting a golf shot. And good luck to you guys with your program. You do a great job.
Thank you.